from the Star Rentals Sports Desk. Your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
There we go, baby. Headlines on a rainy Friday afternoon right here on Softy and Dick. Brought to you, of course, by, wait for it, our friends at VenueKings.com.
Oh, my Lord, 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 Lord.
NFL football. Lots of news to report. Rams wide receiver Robert Woods. 4 years, $32 million guaranteed, worth up to $68 million. The Niners and Jets on Sunday. Head coach Kyle Shanahan says tight end George Kittle is out for the game this Sunday with a knee injury. And the Colts say tight end Jack Doyle will not play this weekend versus Minnesota.
I agree with your tweet. That's a shame. Cedric Agbuyi, Rasheem Green, doubtful for the Seahawks on Sunday. Philip Dorsett is listed as questionable.
NBA news. Giannis, for the second year in a row, your NBA MVP. He joins Michael Jordan and some guy named Hakeem Olajuwon as the only two players in the history of the NBA to win the MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. Game one, by the way, Western Conference Finals tonight. The Lakers in Denver at 6 p.m. from the bubble.
College sports news. The D1 Council has approved a motion that would have no practices or games on Election Day every year. And Ohio State cornerback Sean Wade opting back in for college football this fall.
Good for him. More college football news. Houston Baylor set for Waco tomorrow in Texas has been postponed after Baylor did not meet the Big 12 conference threshold for COVID-19.
And here we go.
Here we go. Ready? Go.
It's Football Friday.
We gotta have it now. We gotta have it now.
Powered by Bud Light Seltzer, official partner of the Seattle Seahawks.
Come on, you're getting hot now. You're getting hot. You're too hot, baby.
On your home for college football Saturdays and the NFL, Seattle Sports Radio 950.
Let's go get it.
KJR.
All right, settle up. Bud Light Football Friday brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer, official partner of your Seattle Seahawks. Softy and Dick hanging out until 6:30 tonight. Is that right? Because we got the pregame show. We're off early. How about that?
Hey,
6:30, LAFC. And the Sounders, Jackson Feltz has been working since last Wednesday for the pregame show today, getting ready. Nine days of preparation for today's half-hour pregame show. Next 6:30 with kickoff at 7 o'clock. LAFC Sounders right here on 950 KJR. Hugh Millen coming up on the radio show. A little fun with audio coming up on the radio show. Chris Price from Boston will join us on the air 5:20. Talk some Patriot football. Billy Krueger coming up on the radio show. What was the name of the guy from Ohio State that opted back in to play football for the Buckeyes this year?
That would be Sean Wade, the cornerback.
Sean Wade. Okay, so I'm assuming Sean Wade did not do what Penny Sewell did and go out and sign with an agent.
I would
Is that
assume
correct?
Not. Okay. I would assume not.
Because don't you
Sewell's
think,
the only one, actually, that I've seen that has signed with an agent.
And don't you think even if they do sign with an agent, if their league, who originally told them, we're not playing football until January, comes back and says, psych, just kidding, we're playing football in November or late October, don't you think that guy then, within a acceptable window, should be allowed to say, you know what, I changed my mind, I want to come back and play this year.
You and I have talked for the last 6 months about being flexible.
Correct.
In uncertain times, and you absolutely, now, handed to the NCAA, they have started to be more flexible about matters like this over the last couple years because they haven't faced, they've faced intense scrutiny and pressure to do so. So the whole waivers thing, the extra year of eligibility, transfers, all that sort of stuff. They are getting more flexible. They need to take it one step further and allow these guys to play if they want to play.
Yeah, I just think in the end, if there's ever a year to kind of bend the rules a little bit for the athletes' benefit, it would be in 2020. Yes. Like the Houston Baylor game got postponed on Sunday. Okay, no problem. Baylor had a bunch of guys test positive for COVID-19 and they said, let's go ahead and call it off. And to me, that's evidence, I guess, Dick, that the system's working. When you can catch these positive tests before the game happens on Saturday, when you can find out that, hey, you've got four or five guys in one position group that are all positive for the Rona, for COVID-19, and you cancel the game, one side of America would say, oh my God, they canceled the game. This is proof. This is a freaking mess. The other side, which I think is the side that I'm on, would say, no. This is proof positive that this is working. And if you're okay postponing games, if you're okay even canceling games for crying out loud, then I think you can find a way to pull this off. Look at baseball. Remember where baseball was when they first got going with the Marlins problem?
Yes.
There were folks out there who thought the baseball situation was going to be an absolute disaster.
Yep.
What did they do? They called off games. They took a week off. They rescheduled. They postponed. They played doubleheaders, and they figured it out. So what exactly is the problem with going ahead in all of these sports?
Nothing, no problem. I do want to correct the record a little bit on this particular situation. You said a bunch of people tested positive.
Yeah.
Actually, nobody has tested positive for Baylor.
All right.
The issue is contact tracing.
Yep.
Evidently, too many of one position group, in this case it was the offensive line,
right.
came into contact with people that tested positive.
Okay. Yeah, fine.
All right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're being uber protective in this because they're not even suspending the game based upon their own positive test.
So those guys may not even be positive, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Because they came into contact with people that are positive, and the fact that they could be positive was reason enough to blow the game up, set for tomorrow in Waco. See, to me, that's an even more impressive situation.
Okay.
Because there is a perception, I think, by a lot of people on the West Coast that people like that, you know, Baylor, Houston, living in Texas, living in the Midwest, living in the South, they could not care less. They are more than willing to let these players walk the plank, right? As long as they get their football, and then feed these kids to the sharks just so they can watch pigskin on a Saturday. You're telling me that they canceled the game based on what could have been a positive test, not what is a positive test.
Yes, but there are reasons we feel that way, and there are reasons those stereotypes exist when you have the head coach of the national champions come on to his press conference and basically with no remorse whatsoever and in almost a gleeful way say, well, you know, the whole team's had COVID, so we're kind of ready to go. I mean,
we have the quote right here, as a matter of fact.
Hey, UCLA O-line coach, not to be me today, son, miss my
That translates to 2,000 people have COVID.
What are we supposed to think out west when coaches like that are just like, well, yeah, you know what? They're going to be healthy now because they've already had COVID. No big deal.
We're waiting for the results of this Pac-12 CEO meeting, which is the chancellors and presidents all getting together. And it's funny how this this meeting works. So apparently, from what I can understand, the ADs are a part of this meeting online. And then when the presidents, if they do go to an actual vote, which I don't know if they will today or not, they kick the ADs off. They close the door. This is 12 people only. Maximum occupancy is 12 folks, and you're not one of the 12, so you're going to have to leave. So the ADs that oversee these departments, the ADs and head coaches that know their football players better than anybody, are not even involved in the conversation when the actual vote comes up in the room. So, look, you know, we'll see what happens today. I'm kind of with John. I'd be surprised if there was a vote today. I do know there's a chance it could happen tomorrow and could happen on Sunday. The idea that these 12 presidents and chancellors are going to take the weekend and go have a little barbecue, play some tennis and hit the links and then come back and reconvene on Monday, that's not how they're working around the clock, and I appreciate that. So keep an eye on Twitter, Nick, the entire weekend because something could come down. Let's get a break. Hugh Millen will join us next segment. His thoughts on all of this. The Hawks and Patriots on Sunday. Lee Sterling will join us. Fun with Audio at 420 on the radio show, including Chris Price from Boston talking Patriots and Seahawks. A lot to get to on a busy Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday right here on 950 KG.
Now back to our Football Friday, powered by Bud Light Seltzer, official partner of the Seattle Seahawks, on your home for college football Saturdays and the NFL, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Hey, 420, a little fun with audio slash, hey, did you hear that?
What's that, Dick?
On the radio show.
Hugh's
we'll do that
favorite
coming
segment.
Up in an hour or so from now. Hugh actually tells me whenever you're gone, and he fills in, he says, Dave, can you just make sure it's a Friday, because I love fun with audio slash, hey, did you hear that?
What's that, Dick?
I love being a part of that. And hey, it's a Friday, but here he is anyway, joining us at 3:20, not 4:20, on the radio show. Huey, how are you, pal?
Hey, boys. What's happening? How are you?
We're good, man. Lots going on. Let's before we talk some Hawks and Cam Newton and Bill Belichick coming to town, Jamal Adams' debut from last week. You're a former Washington Pac-10 quarterback from way back in the day, Orange Bowl champion, so you have a obviously vested interest in what's happening in this conference. Your son plays for the Oregon Ducks. Your other kid's going to Arizona, for crying out loud. So I don't know anybody who's got a more personal connection to this conference than you do. Lots of news involving the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the last couple days. Why don't we just give you the floor and you give us your thoughts on where the Pac-12 is at in your opinion as of right now.
Well, I'm going to preface my remarks by this. On January 1st, 1970, USC beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. Counting that game over the next 25 Rose Bowls, the Pac, you know, it's 8, 10, and 12. Yep. We'll just call it the Pac. The Pac was 19-6. That's 76%. Within that, there was a stretch of 16-4. That's 80%. And if you want to expand it, tack on another 10 years, the Pack won 24 of 35 Rose Bowls. That's 69%. My image now of the Pac-12, you know when you drive around and you see a really big dude walking a little yipper dog, and you go, that's a pretty big, like, why is that little yipper, that's too small, right? That is my image of the Big Ten leading around the Pac-12. I mean, the Pac-12, as evidenced by the stats I just gave you, the Pac-12 used to be a big-ass Rottweiler to carry out the image. And now it's just shameful, and I'll add this with regards to all the foot-dragging. The Pac-12 has, of course, six states that comprise their member schools. Of those six states, four of them are blue. They're the only conference of the Power Five that have a majority blue states. And, of course, nine of the 12 schools are in blue states. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. Am I going to assert that there's some connection? I don't know, but it's a legitimate question. And, oh, by the way, the Big Ten of the other four remaining conferences, they have the most blue states. So is politics playing a part in this? As I said, it's a legitimate question.
I think, of course, politics is playing. I don't think there's a debate about it. Politics is playing a question. I want to know from both of you guys. I want you to speculate for a second. Bruce Feldman put out a tweet today, a quote from a Pac-12 head coach saying, "I don't want to hear health and wellness out of anybody's mouth. The We Are United players, they have a effing point. It's not effing ping pong. You don't just open the garage door and go play. I don't think people know that when the seasons were postponed, the Big Ten and Pac-12 took different paths. They kept going at it like it was still training camp. We didn't. Our nose is so effing far up the Big Ten's ass. Let's just do what's best for the Pac-12." All right, let's play the game.
Yeah.
Which one of the 12 said that, guys?
Hugh, you want to go first? I got an answer for that, but go ahead.
I don't know, but again, yeah, there's a point, but I do think you can get ready to play. These guys are world-class athletes, and they're not going to get out of shape over a couple of weeks. And so I think that I agree with what Rick Neuheisel said. I think these guys can get ready to play. And I will add this. You know, for those, whether you're in the media and your income, and I'm talking to you guys too, and not that your position, I'm not challenging your position, but I'm talking about anybody who's in the media who really is outraged by all this. I want to know, have you consulted the Journal of American Medical Association about all the threat of CTE to college players? You know, by study after study, most notably from the Boston University. If you're a fan who is really outraged by the lack of safety, really, I would say this. You've been complicit, at least tangentially, to this entire enterprise that has 20-year-olds banging heads at each other all the time. So the self-righteousness, I tell you what, when you have on your boy Petros, mm-hmm. I agree with all of that commentary that he offers. Like really, you're going to get really pious and self-righteous about the player's health now? Myocarditis, look, I don't know what the threat is. I know this. You've got adults that are old enough to go get carved up in a war. They, in my version of a world, they ought to be able to be presented the threats as best as we know it.
Yeah.
Put the kids in the young men, and we always say kids to neutralize it. Put the young men in a room and say, this is the best we know about it. If you want to take the risk, sign this waiver.
Well, I would
and then play ball.
Yeah, Dick, just going back to your question, you know, look, that to me sounds like a guy that is trying to make an excuse for why his football team is not ready to go if they play sooner than later.
Absolutely.
And just based on the conversations I've had, I mean, look, I'm just taking a guess here, obviously. It could be one of 12 guys, clearly. We all know that. I think they all talk like that, right? Every single one of them at some point, whether on the air, or excuse me, off the air, at a media event, off the air, the phone, whatever, has all used an F-bomb with me, so I don't know, that sounds like a Chip Kelly type of thing to me. That sounds like the head coach at UCLA making excuses, Hugh, for his team not being ready to play.
Yeah, I don't know who it is, so I'm not going to speculate, but, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people are going to be compelled. One thing we do know is that people are going to be selfish in their interest. If he doesn't think his team is ready to be competitive, whoever said that, mm-hmm. You're going to say that, but again, it's a risky proposition, but football already was risky.
Yep.
And the players know it. I mean, every player and parent of a player has had to confront the Curtis Williams possibility on every single play. You know, some young men want to be part of the special forces. Some young men want to rappel down mountains. Some young men want to take more risks than others. You tell them the risk and you go play ball. That's my thought on the matter. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of embarrassing for the Pac-12, as I said, this proud conference that has had this reputation, to see us be the yipper lapdog to the Big Ten. Yeah, it's discouraging.
Hugh, a month from now, a year from now, 3 years from now, we're going to think back at the opening Seahawks game of 2020 and remember one thing, and that's Jamal Adams. Tell me what you saw from him, and was he used the way you anticipated he would be used?
Well, of the 13 plays that he officially registered a stat, meaning a tackle for loss, a quarterback hurry, a sack, a pass defense, all of that, of those 13 times, six of them were Jamal Adams coming off the edge, on the line of scrimmage, on the edge, and just knifing down at the quarterback or the ball carrier. And of those six times, five of them he came totally ignored by Atlanta. And the one time he was blocked was by Julio Jones, kind of a feeble effort on a play down near the goal line. And so I don't expect the Patriots to just allow number 33 to have carte blanche, unimpeded access to the backfield of the Patriots. So let's see how the adjustments. And then of the other seven, three of them, he was an underneath player in the zone, and four of them, he had deep responsibility. But he made all kind of plays. I think his head hunting is phenomenal. He's an incredible tackler. He can go from zero to his top speed as fast as any defensive player. He can break down quickly. Mm-hmm. The mindset to attack. So he's got great instincts. He's 3 5/8 inches shorter than Cam Chancellor. That's substantial. But that smaller height allows him to be more agile. And so in that sense, you could say he's more of a complete defensive back than maybe Cam was. But it was something else. If he can have that kind of impact this Sunday, now we've really got something to talk about.
Well, and he's got a chance to show that off against maybe the best running quarterback, at least between the tackles, that we've seen in the last maybe 15, 20 years. You know, Cam Newton is a different kind of runner, as we know. But I look at the games he's played against the Seahawks, and people keep talking about him being 1-5 against the Hawks. He's actually 2-6 if you include the playoffs. You know, why people don't include playoff numbers when you talk about how a guy does against the head coach is beyond me. I mean, these are games that they played, so they should count. He's 2-6 all time, Hugh, against Pete Carroll, and in those 8 games, he's a 57% passer, and he averages 3.89 yards per rush, which for a quarterback isn't very good. So Pete Carroll and his defensive coordinators have done a pretty damn good job against this guy.
Well, they have, and I think that 2015 game was a breakout. You know, a lot of people were skeptical about him. And it was week 6.
Yep.
They were coming off a bye. The Carolina was 4-0. And for the first 3 quarters of that game, Seattle absolutely stoned him. He had 2 late drives. And I think that a parallel universe, I think the direction of Cam Newton's career, it absolutely – that was an inflection point on his entire career, was the fourth quarter of that 2015 game.
That's the game Earl Thomas got hurt, right, against the Panthers? Is that correct?
I couldn't tell you that. Yeah. I know that Greg Olsen caught a seam route when Chris Richard couldn't communicate the defense. And out of the back 7, you had 3 guys playing cover 2 and 4 guys playing cover 3. Absolute bust coverage due to poor communication. And that was the culmination for Cam Newton. And then from there, the entire nation and Panther Nation that had been skeptical of him winning big games, that everything changed on that day. And it really wasn't that day. It was the last half of the fourth quarter. Because if you look at his stats before those last couple of drives, he was awful.
Right.
And that was the direction his career was going. But from there, that vaulted his confidence. His teammates believed in him. He went on. They went 15-1. They lost the Super Bowl. He's the MVP. The money, everything. I think that the image of Cam Newton changed on that day. Because if you go back in time, I've done the research at where his career was up until that game. It's a vastly different projection.
Hugh, the Seattle offense threw early and they threw often on Sunday. Was that a matchup against the Falcons specific, or do you think we do have a philosophy change with Pete Carroll in this offense?
Let's see. There were a lot of short passes. The average air yards for Russell was 9.4 last year, 9.0 the year before. It was just 5.3 on Sunday. A lot of short passes where Aaron Rodgers on Sunday had 10 pass attempts where the ball was in the air more than 20 yards from the line of scrimmage. Russell had just 2. So let's see how things go, and can they get the ball down the field. Of course, there's the two big completions to DK Metcalf, but I did want to just re-pivot, Dave, Dick, on Newton in the sense. I studied all morning the tape of Newton against the Dolphins and what this looks like. Couple of observations. For the Patriots, Newton last Sunday was under center 57% of the time. He was in his best years at Carolina, he was only under center 24% of the time. He's a different run threat when he's in shotgun because he can come downhill in the running game. So you saw the Dick, you originally talked about the 15 rush attempts. One of them was a scramble off a pass. One of them was a take a knee. The other 13 were design runs, most of them inside power where he's following the guard. Those are plays designed for running backs. And yet they don't have to have an extra blocker because as he fakes it to the running back on the wide run, he can then read the perimeter of the defense and then elect to keep the ball right up in between the tackles. Russell Wilson doesn't do that. Colin Kaepernick didn't do that. We saw that a little bit from Lamar Jackson. Of course, he has a different frame, but Lamar Jackson's so twitchy, the feeling is in Baltimore that you just can't get a good hit on him. But for Newton, they're willing to let him take those hits. And now the other part of it real quickly was the play-action passes you saw. Newton was under center so often, he was turning his back, and he had 50% of his pass, 11 out of 22 of his passes were from play-action. That's unusual for him. His best year in 2015 – he was under 30%, and then his most recent year, he was at 28%. So he's been under a third of his passes from play action. So there's been a little bit of a difference, at least 1 week into this, in terms of how the Patriots plan to use Cam Newton relative to how he was used in Carolina.
Well, Hugh Millen's with us. Hugh, we got about 2 minutes left before you go, because I know you watch a lot of film. You watched the Dolphin-Patriot game last week. You saw the Seahawks-Falcon game, obviously. Outside of Cam Newton, what else on this Patriot team really kind of maybe flips you out a little bit, besides the head coach for New England, obviously?
Well, they're really good in coverage. They're really good in man coverage. They do matchup zones. A lot of times teams – there's what's called spot drops where when a defender reads pass, he's just going to turn and get to based on the split of the formation. Is it a wide split? Is it a narrow split? Is it a 3-by-1 or 2-by-2? There's different landmarks, but spot dropping zone teams will get to those landmarks and then just put their eyes on the quarterback. The other way to play zone is a matchup zone. If I were to really, really simplify what that means is when players go vertical, it's usually man-to-man. If they go shallow crosses or to the flat, then it becomes zone. And so things change based on how the routes develop. That's a gigantic oversimplification. But New England is more of a matchup zone type team. They play great man-to-man. So I don't think you're certainly on paper not going to have the opportunities outside the numbers and on the perimeter. For Russell Wilson, he's going to have to be inside the numbers, even inside the hash marks, as he tries to make hay in the passing game.
Gotcha. All right, man. Great stuff. Have fun. Enjoy the weekend, pal. We're talking a week, buddy. See you,
man.
Hammer down, guys.
You got it. Hugh Millen with us on the radio show. Some thoughts on the conference, the Pac-12, college football, the Hawks-Patriots, Hawks-Falcons. A lot to get to, but right now it's time for Fact or Fiction, brought to you by our friends at the Emerald Queen Casino.
It's time for Fact.
Just a fact, Jack. That's a fact, Jack.
Or Fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
All right, here we go, baby. So it's Friday, Fact or Fiction. 3:35 means Dave Day. We are through the week. Our final prediction of the week, courtesy of our friends at the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Pacific Northwest. So I have had my eye on this game the entire week. I've also had my eye on Michael Thomas's ankle, watching that after that game with the Buccaneers last Sunday. You realize the Saints put 34 on Bruce Arians' defense, and Michael Thomas caught three balls for 17 yards
in
that game.
Yeah, he was a non-factor last
He did nothing in that game, and the Saints put up 34 on Tampa Bay. Now, look, I think the Raiders' defense a little bit better than the Buccaneer defense is, especially in the back end, but I still don't think it's enough to slow down that offense. Even with Michael Thomas potentially out, and the word is not official yet if he's playing or not, I would expect that with that high ankle sprain, it's likely that Michael Thomas doesn't play. Even with that, I still think the Saints go into Vegas this weekend and ruin the Raiders opener in the Death Star in front of nobody. You're inside. You're on turf. It's going to be a fast track, which is perfect for New Orleans. They got Jared Cook. They got Kamara. They got Emmanuel Sanders. They got Taysom Hill. They got plenty of weapons on that football team to get by the Raiders this weekend. So I like New Orleans minus the 6. I would like it better at 5.5, but I'll take it at 6. Saints given 6 against the Raiders this weekend in Vegas. Their debut in the Death Star. Give me Drew Brees and give me the Saints. And if Michael Thomas plays, that's a bonus. New Orleans given 6 against the Raiders. 49451. Fact or fiction? Fact if you agree. Fiction if you disagree, to 49451 right now.
Well, at least it's under a touchdown. And even if Michael Thomas, I mean, if Michael Thomas plays or doesn't play, he's probably going to have a similar game as he had last week. He's not going for 9 catches, a buck 30, and 2 touchdowns. But I think the fact that it's the stadium's closed down definitely means something for New Orleans this week, because that would be pomp and circumstance. Oh. It'd be the first ever black hole in Vegas. It would be a tough environment for New Orleans to go into. So I think I'd lean that way. It wasn't one that was on my list, but if I had to bet one way or the other, I'd probably lean New Orleans.
All righty, that's a tepid, I think,
it's a
endorsement.
It's a tepid
by
approval.
Tepid endorsement
tepid
by
approval.
You. And you know what? I'll take that, pal. Anything I can get that says I'm doing the right thing, I'll take
it. Team.
49451, Factor Fiction, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Saints minus 6 against the Raiders. Give us a text right now. Remember, you get one pick right a week on any show. You got 20 opportunities. I'd make it harder for you, but for some reason, they think 1 out of 20 is worthy of being eligible for a $1,000 weekly prize. And if you get the picks right, we'll count them all up end of the year, and the winner with the most picks gets 10 G's from the Emerald Queen Casino. Speaking of winners, Lee Sterling, 2-2-1 last week, literally kissing his sister on the air. He'll make his picks for the weekend next on 950 Kick.
Know how.
A little extra pocket change for this weekend?
Yes, I do indeed.
Well, look no further than Paramount Sports' Lee Sterling to tell you how.
I would say this is not an exaggeration. I was just scolded by the assistant program director that we need to get more entries for Fact or Fiction because we don't spend enough time talking about it on the air.
Is that why the people aren't
probably
signing up?
Yeah, it's my fault. You know what? I'll take full responsibility. You know what? Never mind.
Well, this is a team.
I'm going to blame Jackson. It's Jackson's
team
fault.
Effort?
Not this time. This is all Jackson's fault.
Why is it my fault?
Because it is. All right? It's all Jackson's fault.
Jackson's the only one not on the air during that
segment. You get a few seconds left for Fact or Fiction. Get your picks in right now. 49451. Saints minus the points against the Raiders. 73% agree with us so far on that selection. And by the way, again, 20 times a week. 7:35, 11:35, 2:35, 3:35 every day, 4 times a day, 20 times a week. You have a chance to predict a game. We're going to give you a game. And if you agree, you text fact. Disagree, you text fiction. If you're right, you get one right a week. Just one a week. All you have to do is listen for 5 seconds a week, and you're eligible for a $1,000 weekly prize. If you can stomach 10 seconds a week, then you can get a couple of opportunities to get the your hands on a chance at $1,000. So do that every day, 4 times a day. The winner for this whole thing, the most correct picks by the end of the year, gets $10,000, courtesy of the Emerald Queen Casino. It'll happen again, 7:35 on Monday morning with Chuck and Buck on the radio show. Here he is. Speaking of picking football winners, our friend from Paramount Sports in South Florida, 2-2-1 last week, was our friend Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports. Lee, how are you, man?
Not bad. Can't complain.
Oh, I can complain for you. There's plenty to complain about.
Well, you guys, what are you going to start a Pac-12 football, flag football league out there?
At this point, it might be Pac-4. You kidding me? With the way things are going, who knows, for God's sakes. But, hey, the Hurricanes look pretty good last week, right? Miami?
Yeah, big game for them this week. They're they're going to have to win both of the next 2 weeks. They want some momentum heading into Clemson.
Well, let's get to some winners this weekend. Yeah. As we said, 2-2-1 a week ago. This week, Green Bay at home, given 6.5 against Matt Stafford, the Detroit Lions. Green Bay coming off that win in Minnesota last week. Packers looking to go 2-0. What do you think happens this week, man?
Well, Detroit's secondary is an absolute mess. I mean, they didn't play well in the first three quarters. Mitch Trubisky was all over the place. Now they got injuries there. Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers is on a mission, and the Packers haven't lost to an NFC North team going back 2 years. 7-0 straight up. Lions, how about this? Matt Patricia, I think his time might be up. 9-23-1 straight up. Almost as bad against the spread. Give me Green Bay, 34-20.
All right, about 10 minutes ago, your friend, my friend, Dave Softy Mahler, just took New Orleans minus the 6 going to the West against Las Vegas. Do you agree with Dave Softy Mahler?
He should have called me first, I think without Thomas. I think New Orleans' offense is going to be limited here. This is not a division game. They seem to get up for these division and conference games. The Raiders' offensive line, much improved, didn't give up a sack against Carolina. Now they've got the home run hitter in Henry Ruggs. Wrong team's favored. Las Vegas, not the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, 31-30 over New Orleans.
You know, for all that smack you're talking, I really hope for your sake that you're right, pal, or I'm going to rub it in your fat face next Friday at 3:45.
Didn't I call the Seattle win and the San Francisco loss last week?
Yeah, you were also 2-2-1 last week. San Francisco.
Important game.
San Francisco given 6.5. George Kittle looks like he is out for the game on Sunday. Niners are playing back-to-back games at the Meadowlands. Jets this week, Giants next week. Niners given 6.5. What do you see?
Not going to matter here. I mean, the Jets have no running game, no Le'Veon Bell. Sam Darnold, he's going to be a target here. Nick Bosa and D4, they might end up with 4 or 5 sacks in this game here. Fred Warner will do a job, too. He might even throw in and pitch in a sack. I like San Francisco, 27-10 over the Jets.
No Crowder either. I mean, do the Jets even get to double digits? Is the under something you look at here?
Maybe 10 points. I'm being generous. I mean, I think Adam Gase is gone by week 6.
Arizona pulled off a big win for all Hawks fans last week as they beat San Francisco. They're at home against Washington, given 6.
So the Cardinals are in new territory. They are being hunted now instead of being the hunter. They always perform well against San Francisco. Terry McLaurin, I think this kid is one of the best receivers in the NFL. In fact, talked to someone who said a lot of receivers like to work with him in the offseason, feel he runs the best routes. He might be able to do some damage against this Arizona secondary. And I like their defensive line, led by Chase Young. 8 sacks last week on Carson Wentz. I think they're going to limit Arizona. Wrong team's favorite again. Washington, 24-20 over Arizona.
Ooh, wow. I don't see that at all, but whatever. You're the expert, pal. All right, Seahawks given 4 at home Sunday night against Cam Newton, the Patriots. Talk to us.
I think it helps a lot that Seattle gets to see on tape New England from week 1. That RPO that Cam Newton was running, he ran the ball 15 times for 75 yards. I think they're going to limit him. They are going to try to slow the game down. They do not want to have, 12, 14 possessions per team. And finally, we've been talking about it for years, Seattle using the pass to set up the run with Russell Wilson, and New England does have trouble against mobile quarterbacks. I think their safeties are vulnerable. I like Seattle here. I think they win this game here 27-17.
27-17. All right, game of the week, Kansas City, the Chargers. Chiefs looking for a 2-0 start. Chargers trying to avoid 0-2. It's your game of the week.
First 10 callers get it for free, 800-400. 9-7-4-1. We won week 1, went 2-1, 7-5 last week, and won last night with the over on Cincinnati and Cleveland. Now's the time to come on board. My first 40 to 50 unit play in college football, ParamountSports.com.
All right, I'll be texting you for that game, by the way, so answer your phone. All right, Lee, you're the man. Great stuff. We'll talk in a week, buddy. Appreciate
thanks,
this, pal.
Okay. Thanks,
all right, you bet. He's got Green Bay minus the points against the Lions, Vegas plus the six against the Saints, Niners minus the 6.5 against Sam Darnold, Washington plus the points against Arizona. He says they win outright in Arizona, and the Hawks minus the 4 against New England. Well, I tell you what, if all that happens, the Hawks are in first place, right, by themselves. The Rams are playing this weekend too, I guess, but I would be very surprised, wouldn't you, if the Washington football team went to Arizona and beat the Cardinals in Phoenix this weekend?
I would be very surprised. More surprised than if the Vegas Raiders beat New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But if all those things happen,
yep,
and you're looking at the Niners having one loss, the Saints having one loss, the mm-hmm. Cardinals having one loss, mm-hmm. and the Seahawks having no losses, you're in good shape after the first
that team. Means if the playoffs started Monday,
one
we'd
seed,
be
baby.
The number one seed,
one seed
in the NFC. 354. We'll do a little fun with audio. Slash, hey, did you hear that?
What's that, Dick?
At 420 on the radio show, Bill Kruger coming up. Chris Price from Boston coming up on the radio show. Lots to get to on a busy Bud Light Seltzer Football Friday. Official partner of the Seahawks right here on 950K.